All right. Good evening, everyone. My name is Andrew, and I'm an alcoholic. Thank you, Mark, for inviting me to come and participate in my sobriety. And David, great job. Thank you so much for coming. Thank you to you as well, Andre. And Saul, there you go. I almost called you Lewis. Sorry about that, bro. and welcome to anyone that's new or struggling. I've been both. And, I'm grateful that, you know, through strong sponsorship and the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, I was able to find a God bigger than me that allows me to walk through those uncomfortable moments, you know. My sobriety date is December 27th of 2015. I have a sponsor who knows she's my sponsor because I call her 3 times a week as she's directed me to. And I bring her everything that baffles me, man, in life, because even at 10 years, life still hits me and I sometimes don't know what to do, you know, other than bring it to God, you know. And I have a home group, which is the Wednesday Night Pacific group in Culver City. And I was told in early sobriety to get those 3 things, a sobriety date, a sponsor, and a home group. And I've stayed with that this entire time. I guess just get into it. You know, for me, I grew up around alcohol my entire, like, I grew up with alcohol around. My father was an alcoholic. His entire side of the family was all alcoholics. I've had my mom's dad die from cirrhosis of the liver. And I remember watching that happen slowly and helping my grandma trying to take care of him. And like Bill mentioned, you know, ominous warning. I did not see it. You know, I did not see that was going to be something that could possibly happen to me, you know. But even then, I was, you know, after seeing all of that, like, I just didn't know how to behave around people. I always became very insecure and scared. You know, I didn't know how any of you would be able to have conversations with each other or be around each other, right? The idea of being in a crowd just scared me, you know? I always had this self-defense thing where if you approached me to even say hi, I'd always kick you, bite you, or punch you. You know, that was the best that I can do because I didn't know what to do, you know, and for me to be able to, you know, share that or communicate that with anybody that I just had no idea what to do, that wasn't a possibility because, you know, like any other Mexican family, you know, we don't talk about our feelings. We don't talk about, you know, any of that. That's too personal. You just keep that to yourself and bottle it up. That's it, you know. So I never really had any tools for living, you know. Now I can't remember when I had my first drink, but I remember my first drunk, and that was at the age of 17. I was a latecomer, according to some of my old timers, you know. But I remember this specific night because all those feelings that I had just mentioned were happening. The one thing that I definitely loved to escape to was music, right? Music always calmed me down. It always allowed me to just be able to just, you know, stay in that present moment where the beat was, right? And so I remember someone invited me to this backyard show because that was my favorite thing to do, just have a band play there and just be in the front of it and just close my eyes and just hear the music, right? And I guess someone noticed that I was doing that, and they came up to me and they gave me a red Dixie cup. I didn't ask any questions of what it was. I didn't care to. They just said, here, drink this. And I said, okay. And I drank it. And I ended up finding out that was a cup of Jack and Coke. You know, heavy Jack with a splash of Coke. And you know, at first I was just kind of like whatever about it. But then later on, I started feeling this, you know, sensation of just kind of melting into my own skin, you know. And I remember I fell in love with alcohol right there and then. And I fell in love with, you know, that feeling. And I ended up making a decision without even knowing that was the feeling that I was going to be chasing from that moment forward, you know, because it allowed me to be able to have a conversation with you about what I don't remember, right? It allowed me to be able to just be around you and not feel insecure or hide somewhere, you know. It just allowed me to just be present, even in a way that I never was able to experience. And so from that moment forward, I started chasing the parties to be able to get that next feeling, you know. By this point, my mom and my dad had separated. They've been separated for about 10, 15 years, I believe. And all because of my dad's drinking, right? Again, I grew up with alcoholism in my family. And so I was staying with my mom. My mom had a really, really strict rule of no alcohol in the house, not even cigarettes. And she would always do her best to force me to go to church, you know? But what would happen is I would walk into that church and I'd always feel like I'm not made for that, right? Because every time someone was standing at that podium preaching, I'd always hear that everything that was me was not acceptable to God, right? Being a punk goth kid, being a gay man, you know, being fill in the blank, right, was all going to send me to hell. And that stuck with me, you know, because from the ages of 12 to 17, that's when my mom was forcing me to go to church. And then I'd fight her tooth and nail, and she finally gave up and was just like, fine, do whatever you want to do. And I took that to heart, right? And that's when I ended up having my first experience with alcohol. And I bring that up because, you know, from that moment forward, like, I ran rampant. Like, it felt like the collar was off and I was able to do what I wanted to do, you know? And I made it my goal to find those parties. So, you know, I ended up getting myself a little job after high school. And I'll say this. I remember actually before high school when I was finally able to see that there was actually hope for me to graduate and do something with myself. I remember thinking to myself, like, you know, I'm going to go to college. I'm going to get a degree in architecture. And then at the age of 25, I'm going to have my career. At age 35, I'm going to have the house with the white picket fence and two dogs, right? I'm 38 years old. I have none of that. But you know what I do have is an extensive knowledge of how to be able to party, how to be able to chug alcohol in the fastest way, and how to be able to outdrink any of you, right? Well, I'm sure someone here is going to probably compete with me on that one if that were to happen. But, you know, that was what I had to offer, you know? And by this point, I'm drinking when I can. I'm working to the best of my ability, but I, you know, would miss work because I'm either too drunk or passed out, you know, or from being too drunk, you know? And I'd always call out sick, or my grandmother died again, or something happened, you know? And that became a routine thing. And apparently, I did not know that jobs did not like that. So what would they do? They'd let me go, you know? And I'd become a victim of, like, how dare you, you know? I would not understand that I was doing that to myself, because all they were asking was for me to show up for a certain amount of time for an exchange of money, you know? And so, yeah, I'd start that journey of just losing job after job. And here's the thing. I always tell the guys that I sponsor, like, it's easy for someone like us to be able to obtain to get a job. But to keep a job, that's a whole different story when we're in active disease, you know? And that's what happened. You know, I would always be able to land a job. And I've landed some pretty good jobs. I ended up working at this hair studio in West Hollywood for a celebrity hairstylist, man. I was doing marketing for her products that she marketed. I was working with celebrities. I had celebrities' phone numbers in my phone. But yet I still managed to let go of that job all because of my drinking, you know? And again, always playing the victim. I can never take ownership at the fact that I am the leading problem. I am the problem, right? And by this point, you know, I'm also losing friendships after friendships because of the fact that people don't know what kind of Andrew they're going to be getting that night, you know? Because I'm the type of person, I don't know about you, but I like pre-drinking before the pre-drinking before the pre-drinking. You know, I like to be ready because alcohol was doing for me what I cannot do by myself, you know? King Alcohol gave me the ability to be around you, to be able to have conversations with you. So for me to walk into your house to get ready to go somewhere else where there's more people with no alcohol or anything in my system, that's unacceptable. No. You know? And so, of course, I'd show up to friends' houses, or I'd show up to bars or clubs, and, you know, I'm already intoxicated, completely out of my mind, and either people were, like, some people would see me as the life of the party, because if they saw me and I have money, guess what? I'm buying everyone a drink, right? I got that from my dad because I see that happen in the family so many times, right? But then there's also those group of friends where they're just kind of like, oh man, mm-mm. And they turn around and just walk away, you know? And I never understood why until I came into the rooms this time around. And when I ended up getting to, you know, after doing this for many years, in 2008, I ended up losing the job for the fourth time. And I was, again, quick enough to find a job again. And they gave me my start date. And I remember telling myself, because I don't know about you guys, but I needed alcohol to be able to mourn things or to celebrate things, right? And so when I got this job, it was not anything special. It wasn't no career. It was working at Baskin Robbins, you know. But I needed to celebrate this opportunity that I had another job, you know. And I walked into to this club in Hawaiian Gardens, actually. That's funny. Then I just thought about that. And I remember going in there all excited. I had barely a couple, couple $100 and. That the minute I walked in, I started buying everyone drinks because I knew that this was a moment to celebrate because I'm selfish and self-centered, right? Everything has to be about me. And I knew I spent that money because I knew people were going to get me because that's how it's always been at this point, you know? And that very evening, you know, again, I did what Andrew would normally do. I got completely wasted. And at the end of the night, you know, I got in a car with a couple friends who were just as intoxicated as I was after another group of friends telling me, like, don't do it, just come home with us. And I just was defiant because the party already started and I needed to complete it all the way through, you know? And so we got into this car, and on the way home, going from one freeway to another, right on the off-ramp, the driver ended up driving off the ramp, and we ended up flipping about three or four times, according to someone that's witnessed the entire accident, right? And seconds and inches, as Norm Alpe would always say, you know, seconds and inches. That day, I should have been dead, right? I had no seatbelt on. The person that was sitting right next to me had no seatbelt on. She ended up flying out of the car and landed a foot away from the driver's back tire. And, man, when I ended up getting into the hospital, they ended up telling me that I had like I don't even remember what it was, but it was pretty high to a point where like the doctor was just kind of like, I don't even know how you're walking. And I didn't see anything wrong with that. You know, I didn't think that alcohol had anything to do with that. I just thought that was just poor, unfortunate circumstances, you know? The very next weekend, I went back into it again, drinking, not seeing anything. You know, I found this local dive bar in the city of Gardena that, you know, I ended up becoming real close friends with the bartenders. And we, after closing hours, we'd stay there playing, you know, quarters and pool and continuing to drink until 6 in the morning. The morning shift bartender would walk in, they're like, you guys are still here? And we're like, yeah. And that's just what my life turned out. And eventually my mom ended up, you know, for like the 100th time waiting for me, not losing sleep. You know, she's completely losing sleep, worried about me. And I stumble into the apartment, and my mom looks at me and she's like, what are you going to do with yourself? And I'm like, Mom, don't start. Right? Another argument with her. Now, keep in mind, I'm staying in her apartment, not helping her with any of the bills, not paying anything, right? And I'm over here disrespecting her in her house. And she tells me the words that I never thought I'd ever hear, and I could not see what she was talking about. She said, you're becoming your dad. And I'm like, uh-uh, that's not true. And here's why. Because my dad, at least this, here's why now, right? My dad can actually go to work from beginning to end, bring the paycheck, pay the bills, bring food to the table, and then go and continue to drink, right? I, on the other hand, can't even do any of that. My paycheck is gone in instance because I'm paying off my creditor at the bar. I'm buying everyone drinks. And the only money that I have left is for a bus pass because, you know, why get a car when you can just take the public transportation? And for my cell phone because I needed to have that on so that I always stayed informed of where the next, you know, gathering was going to be at. And we ended up getting into an argument and she kicked me out, you know. And from that moment forward, I'm going couch to couch, not really ever having a place of my own, you know. And again, do not see anything wrong with that. Just poor unfortunate circumstances, you know. My mom's just being overly dramatic, right? And after a week of being there, my mom reached out to me. She's like, can you do me a favor? And I said, what? And she said, can you go to a meeting with me? And I said, sure. And so she took me to this Spanish meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous where they yell sobriety at you and tell you they tell you what you have to do and how the fourth step is going to get you. And I'm just standing there like, what in the hell is going on here? You know? And that was my first experience with Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I didn't hear anything other than them yelling at me. And I remember looking at the walls and seeing the steps and seeing you guys trying to trick me by putting him in capital letters, you know. And again, the idea of me and God not working, right? So I thought that this was a religious organization, and I was like, this isn't for me, you know. So I proceeded to try to white knuckle for 6 months, manage and control my drinking in all aspects. Everything that's read in chapter 3 in that portion, I tried, except for taking a trip and not taking a trip. Well, I did not take a trip. I couldn't afford taking trips. but I tried reading inspirational books. I remember buying some books saying like, okay, this is going to be the solution. And none of that worked because I did not know how to apply any of it, right? But also, most importantly, it wasn't just getting my mind set straight, right? It was a lot of other things that I could not see or understand. And I did that for almost 6 months, right? And in October of 2009, you know, because of how selfish and self-centered I am, it's October, it's my birth month, like, you got to celebrate, right? I think, and I fell into the delusion that it's been a while. I think I can have a couple drinks, celebrate, right? And I proceeded to do that, and the experiment went really well, you know, until it didn't the very next morning when I caught myself buying, you know, white substances from one of my friends, you know, and now I'm over here drinking all over again, doing what Andrew does best, you know, with what he has, and I ended up getting into that. Like, things started getting completely worse, you know, again, still losing job after job and getting into, you know, losing friendships. At this point, my pool of friends is getting smaller and smaller. And in 2012, I ended up finding him, he who's going to change everything, you know, and boy, did he. He ended up introducing me to a little recreational heroin. And so for the next 4 years, I ended up doing that, you know. Now, I'm going to respect Alcoholics Anonymous in our traditions, but I am so grateful that in my experience, drugs are a part of my story because of the fact that it brought me to my knees faster, right? It really did bring me down to my knees faster, because if it was just alcohol, I probably would not be here right now. You'd have a complete different speaker, you know? And in 2015, after that relationship ended, which is funny because I was telling my current partner right now that my stomach was starting to get in knots driving up here because I did a lot of my partying here as well. And so all those memories flooded right back. And I remember the pain and misery that I started experiencing, you know, where it just started getting lonely and dark and cold. And, you know, the shadow people definitely were my companions at this point. And in 2015, that relationship ended, and I did what any good, strong Mexican man would do. I called my mommy, you know. And my mommy did, and my mom, keep calling her mommy, my mom did, you know, fell to my lying and deceit again, you know, told her that I was ready to do something different, and she allowed me to come and stay at her place for a month. And after that month, of her realizing that, you know, I was stealing all the things that she needed for her health, right? That I'd stay days on end not coming home. And when I did come home, I'm picking my face, stuck in the bathroom, and just look completely dead, right? I look at pictures today of that time frame and seeing that yellow-green skin, you know, the marks all over my face and in my chest and in my back. And I remember taking those pictures thinking that I look cute as hell. And now I see those and I'm like, oh, buddy. And my mom once again kicked me out of her house. And I'm so grateful that she did that. But at the time, I was not grateful. Because again, how dare you do this to me, you know? Playing the victim card. And I remember telling her, you know what? This is it. Don't ever talk to me. Don't ever, you know, don't look for me. Don't nothing. You're dead to me. And I grabbed all my personal belongings and I walked out, you know? And my life was reduced in that very moment to 2 bags. And that's it. I went to the city of Downey where I still had a job that was hanging by a thread. And tried asking my coworkers, not seeing anything wrong with that, y'all. I'd come up to my coworkers like, I need your guys' help. Hoping that I can get that sympathy card and that someone would open the doors at me. But again, keep in mind how I looked. Not well. And they, of course, said, no, we can't help you. I'm sorry. You know, and I'm so grateful that they said that as well. And what ended up happening is I started roaming around with my personal belongings in the streets of Downey all the way to the streets of Claremont. And if you know where those areas are, Claremont and Downey are pretty far from each other. But through some good help through, you know, my gods at this point, you know, anything was possible. And I was surviving barely by the skin on my teeth, you know. Those lower companions started coming in to a point where my friendships became transactional. You know, no one really was calling me to check in on me because of the fact that I burned every single bridge with every single friend that I had at that point. And again, didn't see anything wrong with it. Didn't see that my drinking and using was the problem. And I would do such pitiful and incomprehensible demoralizing things. Like, the biggest memory for me is just walking and having my feet completely damaged from all the walking that I would do. Having sores on under my feet, bloody, and being in pain. But I still did what I had to do to be able to get my next fix, you know. I would rush over to a park that was right off the 605 freeway early in the morning. And I remember hearing the birds and just being like, man, what's going on? Like, I started seeing the subtle signs, right? Finally. And I would rush over as soon as the park custodian would go up to the bathrooms and unlock it and open the gate. I'd rush over there as soon as they drive off and I'd completely strip down, give myself bird baths because I had standards. I had to do certain things to allow myself to feel normal, right? And I did that for many months until one day I just, you know, got tired. And it was in the rooms that of Alcoholics Anonymous where I heard I got sick and tired of being sick and tired. You know, I was alone. It felt like, as Bill talks about, quicksand surrounded me all over, right? But for me, it was a brick wall that was just slowly being built up. And I couldn't see anything, right? I had no future in the horizon, no nothing. I had all my hopes and dreams were out the window. Like, all I was trying to do was just survive. And I did that alcoholic prayer of God, please help me, to a God that I didn't care about, a God that I didn't think was going to do anything for me. And those small coincidences, like David mentioned earlier, right, started happening. The next morning I woke up and I started picking up the phone and calling people. Now, I've done this before. No one answered because I burned those bridges. I've done people wrong, right? When I got to my amends, that was some painful amends that I had to go and do, you know? No one picked up except for 2 people. One person that I used to drink with at that dive bar that I found in Gardena, who one minute were partying hard and she's my kind of gal. We're like, you know, making games out of, you know, how many men we can sleep with because that made sense to both of us. And then out of nowhere, she stopped going to the bars. She wasn't going to the parties. And I was just kind of like, what's going on here? come to find out, her son at the time was 20 years old, and he suffers from cerebral palsy as well as autism. And the minute he got sick, her world stopped, right? And she was, and she stopped partying and drinking so that she can be taking care, so that she can take care of her son full time, right? That was what was sufficient enough for her to stop. Now, keep in mind, I've been in accidents. I've done things with people that I never expected to do. I've done things to be able to get what I needed to get. I've been on the streets, couch to couch, everything, right? None of that seemed like an issue for me. But for her, her son's safety was very important. And that woman directed me to the Midnight Mission in downtown Skid Row. Now, I've never heard of Skid Row. I've never heard of organizations like the Midnight Mission, right? I've heard of sober livings, and I've heard of your silly little rules, like you can't drink or you know, do drugs, and you had to tell people what where you were going and get it approved. Like, I was just like, you're doing too much. No, I'm good. And then they told me about going to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I remember that day in 2008 when I saw these steps. And I was just like, no, that's not for me, right? But she directed me to the Midnight Mission, and I ended up walking in there in July 15th of 2015. And I remember walking off out of the bus and just being baffled at the idea of, like, all the people there. I felt like I was walking into an episode of The Walking Dead. And I didn't know what I was getting myself into, but I was desperate enough, and I grabbed my two bags, and I walked over to the gate, and I had to wait for this case manager to get back in from her lunch. And I waited there. She ended up forgetting about me, leaving me there, and it was Friday, and so I had to wait until Monday when she came back in. God moment, God shots right there for me, because I had to really realize, did I want to do this or not, right? And I stayed that weekend in their courtyard, did not use, and it was painful. I was scared for my life, but it was better than what I was doing before, you know? And Monday comes through, and they got me into the Midnight Mission. And I remember just being completely grateful to have a cushioned surface to lay on and a hot shower and some clean clothes, and not having to walk with all my personal belongings, right? Those were just the small things, right? And little by little, I started, you know, finally able to get sleep. I was able to, you know, eat something, and I was able to just have a clear mind, right? And I remember... it's funny, now I work at the Midnight Mission, and I see guys have the same similar experience as I had. And the one thing that I love seeing is when the lights turn on, but not in a good way, it's their ego comes on, right? And now they feel like they're above everything else, like they got that fight in them again, and they're trying to do things their way, right? Like, you can't tell me what to do or where to go, right? And I remember having that experience, and they told me to get a meeting, get a sponsor, and I got a sponsor, but I wasn't interested in anything he had to say other than how fast can we get to that 13th step, right? That's all I cared about, because I had no respect for any man, right? They told me to go to meetings, and I found meetings that were loud and obnoxious, and that was my thing, right? Everyone was sleeping with everyone, and there was curse words left and right, and you know, the chanting and all that. Like, I was like, all right, this is for me, right? They told me, and then those meetings told me, get a commitment. And I got one commitment, and then I started noticing how bad you were doing your commitment. So I took over that commitment for you, right? And then I saw someone else do something wrong with their commitment, or they weren't showing up, you know, weekly. So I took it upon myself, right? The only thing that I was not doing was treasury and secretary. And they let me. That's the funny part. And I'm running Self-Will Run Riot in that time frame, right? And I'm not interested in working your silly little steps, because it just seems so dumb. And again, the idea of God and me, nah. But keep in mind, I ended up doing that alcoholic prayer to God of, please help me. I asked for that help, and I got it. And the minute I started feeling better, I started shutting the door on God and anyone else that was willing to get me into a right path, right? And on December 25th, 2015, it was Christmas Day. They had strict rules of holidays. You cannot go out on passes at all. And And so me and this other guy, we ended up making plans that night. We were hanging out, doing their Christmas celebrations, and we made plans because he was from Chicago. And I felt that it was my job as a Los Angeles native to show this guy around. And so we ended up making plans to go to Universal City Walk because we were both broke. We were going to get a pint of vodka, and we were going to share that together and just enjoy the day, right? And we executed that plan that very next morning. But now here's what happened. The minute we got to that liquor store, I started noticing my shoulders dropping because I knew what we were going for. And the minute I had that pint in my hand, it was cheap Papa vodka. Like, I never really liked vodka. But for some reason, the minute it touched my hand, I started feeling a lot better. And I ended up cracking that seal, and I was able to breathe again. Didn't even realize that that was happening. And when I took that first sip, I had the bright, quick idea of, hey, why don't I keep this and you get another one? And he was like, great idea. And he just went and got himself another one. And we both proceeded to pound that whole entire pint. And then we went about our day. And everything was good for the next couple of hours. But after that, I don't know about him, but for me, this turned back on. Alcohol was no longer doing for me what it used to do, right? It didn't put the voices away. It didn't stuff my feelings away, right? If anything, it made my feelings burst inside of me, and I was just flooded with so many insecurities and fears, specifically the fear of being back out on the streets, the fear of losing my family after working 6 months of trying to build their trust and love again, the loss or the fear of losing those friendships that I was making in the Midnight Mission. All of that started kicking in, and I was not able to enjoy that buzz. And that very same evening, I did what any other guy that was not working a program of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is get drunk, get sober enough to be able to walk through security and not get caught, and then go to sleep, and then do it all over again, right? But what happened is that for me, I went to sleep, and I cried myself to sleep yet again, asking God to help me. Because I did not want to lose any of those things, right? And again, God answered, because I woke up the next morning and I honestly feel that I did a thorough first step where I noticed where I was powerless over alcohol and how my life was unmanageable, right? Where my life was unmanageable in more than one way. And I did what I could not do for myself up until this point, and I walked up to my case manager and I told him the truth. And I had my stuff packed up because, I'm such a drama queen. I packed my stuff before I saw him, knowing that he was going to kick me out. Walked into his office, told him. He walked out for 20 minutes, comes back. He's all like, all right, we're going to restart you again. Because unlike everyone else, we didn't catch you. You came to us. You shared your honesty with us. And so we're going to give you a second chance. And I'm so grateful for that. Because there's another God moment right there, another moment of grace for me. And I jumped right in. I did that walk of shame. I hated that walk of shame where people were coming up to me like, hey, why are you moving from dorm two to dorm one? Because that was dorm two was a perk, right? Less people, more space, closet space, the showers there were actually hot. And like everyone respected each other, right? And so now I'm losing this perk to go back to the loudest dorm where all the new people were coming in, the ones that smelled, the ones that were miserable, right? And I'm doing that walk of shame and people are asking me questions and I'm just like, man, answering them because I didn't want to lie. The truth was going to come out. And that was more than enough for me to make the conscious decision that, you know what, I'm going to put my all into Alcoholics Anonymous this time. Right? I'm going to follow what they asked me to do at the Midnight Mission. And I did that. Right? That very same night, one of the advocates pulled me into his office because he saw the color of the badge that I had on. Because, depending on how long you've been there, you had a different color badge. And he saw that mine was the newcomer one. And he locked me in there and he's like, what happened? And I told him, and he's just like, man, look, an alcoholic of your type needs structure. You're an unstructured man. Undisciplined man, and I think you need to go to the Pacific group. And at this point, I've already heard everything about that group, and I was like, no, I'm good. I'm good. And then he did the one thing that I love now doing to the guys that I sponsor is he cracked open this big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, went to the pages of the spiritual experience, and he ended up pointing out that line of contempt, pride, investigation. And I didn't need anyone to explain that to me. I understood what he was trying to tell me. And so he made a bargain with me. He's like, why don't you go to a meeting? If you don't like it, come back, let me know, and we'll find you another meeting. And I said, okay. And he said, but if you do like it, I want you to find a sponsor, and I want you to get involved with that group. And I said, okay, fair enough. And that very night, I walked into my first Pacific group meeting. So over 10 years now, and the idea of just like glorifying, like that home group did a lot for me. But it's just another room of Alcoholics Anonymous that's just structured and busy, and I love that. And I fell in love with that group the minute I walked in, because what I saw was people's teeth. I heard laughter, which was the best medicine that I needed. And people came up to me and they introduced themselves to me and invited me to come in. Now, I've been to other meetings and they didn't do that for me, right? This group did it. And then the next evening, I went to another meeting, and those same people came up to me, remembered my name, shook my hand, and said, welcome, come on in, right? That first night, I ended up getting my current sponsor, just because of the fact that I saw her, she was laughing, and I was just like, great. She was a woman, and I was just like, I have no respect for men right now, so I need a woman, because I'm such a mama's boy. So I got her, and she laughed, because I didn't know what I was doing. I just went up to her, and I was just kind of like, would you be my co-sponsor? She had that same reaction, and she was like, sure. And she got me right in the middle. She told me, get a commitment, go to 7 meetings a week, call me every day. She didn't kill any time with me, right? She got me right into the first page, the blank one. And she said, we're going to start there tonight. And I was like, okay. And the next morning, we talked about that. And then we started going through the book, line by line, word for word, page by page. When it had a question, she asked me that question directly to me. She'd share her experience in portions. She literally made the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous come to life, and she allowed me to be able to see myself in those pages. And she was able to show me where I can find the solutions to all of my problems today, right? This woman got me active in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm so grateful for that, because of that experience, I was able to get a new way of life that I didn't even dream about at that very moment. I just did not want to lose my family. I didn't want to end up on the streets again carrying all my personal belongings and walking endlessly with no purpose. And this woman got me in the middle. And then little by little, she started asking me to do things like go and talk to you, get your number and call you and check in on you. Because she knew off the bat I had no communication skills. I didn't know what to ask. I didn't know how to keep a conversation. And little by little, I started making friends in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? I ended up getting this one girl who literally took me right under her wing, and she'd pick me up from the midnight mission, and she'd take me to meetings outside of the Pacific Group, in the Pacific Group. Every AA conference, we would go together. Every panel during the holiday, like marathon panels, she'd pick me up and we'd go to them. She'd take me to psychiatric units, and she'd always tell me, like, aren't you grateful that we get to walk out of here? And then she'd do, 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 do the little song. I was like, I love her. I love her. Right? That girl got me in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous along with my sponsor. And then she was the first one to tell me, because my sponsor already heard, and my sponsor was spoon-feeding me God, right? Because she understood where I came from with the idea of God, right? And this friend was asking me to pray with her. And I started taking those actions. I was like, this is stupid, you know? But I do it. And when I was about to turn 2 years sober, she was about to turn 3. And that fire started going away because she met this boy at the midnight mission through the help of me, you know? And this boy was not interested in recovery, right? He was just there because the court sent them. And she got involved with him. And I remember she called me one day and she was just like, I can't stop lighting it. And I instantly knew what she was talking about. And that very instant, I ended up losing the bestest friend that I had in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that hurt me. That devastated me. I didn't know what to do or how to behave or how to react, right? My sponsor ended up picking me up, and she said, go to the men. The men will take care of you. And so I did that. I went to a men's stag, not my favorite meeting out of the Pacific group, the Friday night men's stag, but I went there for a month, and those men took care of me, you know? And I started finding other men's stag meetings in Los Angeles, and I started going to those. And in the rooms, once again, I learned how to be able to build partnerships and friendships with other sober folks, and they showed me how to be able to walk and mourn with dignity and grace, and how to stay active in Alcoholics Anonymous, so that when the day comes that she's finally ready again, that I could be there. You know? And I've had several moments like this. I ended up getting into a relationship with this newcomer. And, because, you know, and I started working his program, or at least I thought, because he was defiant, right? And when I kept seeing him drink after, like, each day, it started hurting me again, right? Now, I'm the type of person where I guess I'm a gluttonous for pain, but I ended up learning a valuable lesson. I did not want to drink, but I started to let loose on the steps. I started to let loose in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous because my whole attention went to this guy. And lo and behold, I ended up having the thought of suicide because I just did not know how to get out of it. I was too afraid to tell my roommate at the time because that was his sponsee and I was ashamed. I didn't want to tell anybody, right? But I ended up praying to God, asking for the right thought or action. That's actually today my favorite line out of the Big Book on page 87, where it says, we pause when agitated or doubtful, and we ask for the right thought or action. And then if you flip the page, it talks about, again, it reminds me to say, thy will not mine be done. And then below that, it reminds me of the fact that I am undisciplined, right? I make so many dumb mistakes, and my sponsor always reminded me, you can do anything you want in Alcoholics Anonymous so long as you're willing to pay the price and so long as you do it with a sober breath. And I took that to heart, literally. And I've done so many mistakes in Alcoholics Anonymous, but I stayed sober and I was willing to pay the consequences until the pain became too great and I was finally able to do something different. And because of that, all those lessons, I ended up learning how to be able to walk through even the worst challenges. Last year was not the best year for me. You know, in 2023, I ended up getting into a car accident that resulted me to dislocate a disc right in between my collarbone and my neck, and I was afraid, right? Because they were starting to talk about surgery and then pain medication. And I was like, oh, I've seen several people go out on pain medication after a surgery, so I was afraid, right? But I jumped right in with sponsees in the book. I started praying to God even harder, right? I started seeking God. Like, I at that point, like, I had a full understanding that I have no idea who God is. And that's great. I just got to continue to search, right? And I ended up having that surgery. But before that, my father ended up coming back into my life, and he ended up getting sick. And me and my dad weren't getting along at this point. After making an amends, he ended up cheating on my mom with a 17-year-old in Mexico. And I inserted myself in that relationship between my mom and my dad because how dare you? That's my mom, you know? And my sponsor reminded me that is their relationship. Before you came around, that was a relationship between them. So you can't get involved with that. And so I stepped back and I just let him go. And when he came back to us sick, I remember thinking to myself, you know what, screw him. Let him die. I don't care. But then I ended up bringing it to God, and I ended up remembering about forgiveness, you know? And I went to go visit him in the hospital, and I remember walking in through that threshold, and he was so adorable. He was laying there, not completely out of it, and he was doing this number, and I'm like, what is he doing? And then he started going like this, and I'm like, what's going on here? You know, I thought it was the medication. Come to find out, or at least from what I can see, right? He was envisioning himself showering. And so it clicked in my mind, like, oh, he probably feels dirty right now. So I grabbed the warm wipes, and I started giving him a bath from his bed. And that moment forward, I ended up feeling this deep connection with my dad, where I saw another man, another human being. Not an alcoholic, not my dad that was destroying our family, just another human being that was not present and needed help. Another God's child, children. And so I ended up helping him, and I did the most, I'd like to say, the strongest amends and forgiveness that I've ever done. And in March of last year, he ended up passing away. And when we buried him, I had no regrets. I had nothing but love. I was able to be there for my family. And I felt like I got my father back. All that is a direct result of Alcoholics Anonymous and the things that we go through here. And I'll end with this. If it wasn't for all those experiences that I had out there, now if you're new, don't go doing the same mistake I did. Don't go creating chaos, and you know, just try to do your best to keep your side of the street clean. Get connected with God. Find yourself in the big book and work those steps. Apply those steps on your day-to-day life. I'm now doing a inventory or the steps all over again, but without, you know, stuff. I just did a step one with when it comes to work and personal relations in a very thorough way, and man, these steps still come to life for me, and I'm so grateful for that. So if you're new or if you're struggling, welcome. Get in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. Find God. And I hope that you stick around. Thank you.